Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, you can call me Xanthi, and today's episode is based on minutes 121 through 125 of Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. This set of minutes opens with an aerial shot of 13 Resistance ski speeders cruising toward the First Order battle line with red trails behind them, and ends with Finn attempting to sacrifice himself for the cause. Today, I am joined by Alex Damon, also known as Star Wars Explained. This is our third attempt recording, and we're gonna nail it.
You killed that intro again.
Thank you.
I mean, you did it great every single time. But
thank you. I'm here all episode. So, without further ado, so much happens in these minutes. I'm very excited to talk with you about the music and sound design and, you know, all of the things that are happening. How about we go sort of, we can sort of go in chronological order, but if there are offshoots and like tangents to go on, then we can just take little diversions along the way.
Sure.
Awesome. So this set of 5 minutes is really, really packed with motifs and very familiar things. If you've been watching not only this movie, but just like, I don't know, many of the films in the Star Wars saga, especially Empire Strikes Back, I'd say, we get a lot of short action cues that are sort of jam-packed together. And on the soundtrack, this corresponds with Battle of Crait, which is one of the tracks at the end.
That's in one of our previous attempts at recording. I think you said you counted like 12 motifs. I counted 6, so I'm really interested to hear the other 6.
I'm curious which 6 you heard.
Okay. It starts off with March of the Resistance. That's mixed in with Rose's theme. We've got the Rey's theme comes in a couple times while she's in the gunner seat. The TIE fighter attack from A New Hope and Return of the Jedi. Where did I get the other 2 from? I may have miscounted. I may have only gotten 4.
No, I feel like you got a couple more just because they're very obvious ones.
What am I missing? 2, 3, 4. What obvious
ones am I
missing?
There's the Rebel fanfare.
Oh yeah, the Falcon showing up. Oh yeah, there's that. I just got 5 because I did have Falcon written down, but I don't see anything else.
To be fair, those are all the main ones. I mean, we also get a little bit of Kylo Ren.
Okay.
But it's a little bit...
I think I actually missed that because I was listening for it, but...
The thing is, when it shows up, it's a little bit odd. Like, the first note is changed of it. So normally it will go like, dee, 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 dee. But instead it goes like, dee, 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 dee.
Huh.
So it does this first note double instead of, you know, usually the first note is a little bit higher. Yeah, so that is a little bit different. And then the other ones, like I would say you got all the really main ones, and the other ones are more incidental motifs. So they're not necessarily all ones that are attached to characters or really big ideas, but ones that are maybe pop up a lot in action sequences. But we'll get to that. It'll be grand. So this opening shot, wow. It's...
Yeah.
Just gorgeous.
I love Crait and the whole idea of Rian Johnson saying that, you know, it's a PG-13, it's a Star Wars movie. They're not very bloody, but the idea that we could get some red in there mixed in with all the action. I thought that was a great idea.
Me too. And I feel like there are a lot of, it reminded me of a lot of things. Like, I feel like this scene has a lot of, you know, not only rhyming, so to speak, with The Empire Strikes Back, but also just internally, like within the movie itself. And I mean, so much about this set of minutes is, you know, like with the red is not actually blood, it's actually the red dirt from the planet. And a lot of things are just so overtly like symbolic in this, like it feels very intentionally like part, I don't know, part of the like myth and part of the whole, I don't know, everything about it is just so, I don't know. Do you kind of get what I'm saying? It's like,
Everything like feels like it has a purpose. Yeah.
Yes.
Everything that's seen on the screen. I mean, that just feels like Rian Johnson's filmmaking, which I've only seen about half of his filmography, but from what I have seen, that just feels like he's always constantly just filling his frame with important things, whether it's right in front of you or in the background, just stuff to catch upon repeat viewings.
Totally. And so, like you said at the beginning, it opens with March of the Resistance. So that will be like, do, 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 do. And it kind of, it does a long instance of it. Like instead of kind of ending with, it kind of keeps going upward and is like dragged out to like almost double the length. And then right after that, we get a close up of Rose touching the medallion. And of course, we get Rose's theme. What do you think of Rose's theme?
In that moment, at least, I think it kind of flows from March of the Resistance really well, but I like that she's kind of touching the pendant as she's getting ready to go on an attack, because it gives off this sense that it's not about vengeance for her or anything. She's more remembering her sister and kind of like what would Paige do? She died defending the resistance and making sure they could all continue to live on. And that's just what her goal is. Just kind of like a subtle reminder that she's not in it to kill. She's in it to defend, which is mm-hmm. obviously how we don't get to it in these 5 minutes, but that's how the scene ends with her, that statement to Finn about saving what we love. So I just liked that moment, but I would love to hear your thoughts on the theme musically, because I never really put a whole lot of thought into the music that I'm hearing, like technically, which is why I love like your show and the soundtrack show and stuff like that so much, because it just educates me on things that I never ever knew went into composing.
Hmm. Oh, it's interesting that you phrased it that way. Specifically the end part where you said what goes into composing, because music is, I think of it as like one more technique, one more tool in the like director's toolbox. And of course the composer is the person who does it, but like also the director has a pretty big influence on it. And in this film, I mean, I know Rian Johnson had a pretty big influence on it as well. It's really a group effort to, it's not like the composer completely has free reign. However, John Williams does have, you know, over his 40 years of doing Star Wars, 50 years, I mean, something really absurdly long.
44. Yeah.
He's developed like a sense of internal consistency. So that makes it like extra gratifying to parse through a John Williams score, just because he accidentally ended up building up this library of like thematic connections and little things that he can pull from. And he didn't mean to do that, just going into the first film, but you know, he has gone on the record saying that like eventually, you know, when it became clear that they were making more, like he just fell into that. And I mean, it's great for us because there's so much material to analyze. So Rose's theme is really interesting. It's one of the main things, like I remember leaving the theater being like, whoa, there was a new theme and I can't get it out of my head. There was a new theme. Oh my gosh. Rose's theme. Okay. Doing this on my violin because my piano isn't hooked up to this situation that we have right now recording, but the mode of it is really related to, it shares similarities with Yoda's theme and young Anakin's theme. And let's see, it's in the first two chords. So let's see, how can I best do this? Okay. Let's see. So think of the first two chords as, okay, if you imagine Yoda's theme, it's like do 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 do. It kind of has that like sense of optimism and like looking up and a little bit of magic. And if you think of young Anakin's theme, it's similar. It's like do 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 do. Harmonically, this is like the exact same progression. And in Rose's theme too, the beginning starts like that. Do do. It's like would be so much easier if I were playing chords at the same time. But do do do. Okay, well, harmonically they're related, and
hear it and I believe you.
Okay, great. And if you look into other John Williams works, you can also hear it in like the E.T. theme. You can also hear it in like a little bit of Jurassic Park. And I think it's really interesting that Rose gets that too. And also the beginning of her theme has sort of the same notes as the Force theme. And the Force theme would be like do 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 do. And so it's just like major instead of minor. So I don't know. I always say that Rose was probably meant to have a bigger part because she got this big theme. Like you don't create, you know, the Kaminoans don't create without a purpose. Like John Williams doesn't create full on developed leitmotifs without a purpose.
I wonder if I think it's really interesting that, yeah, she has a theme that's similar to Yoda's and the Force, and not saying that she is like, you know, Force sensitive in the way that Jedi is, but that she just gets it. She gets the light side, basically.
Yeah. And I think it speaks to a hopefulness about her, like an optimism and sort of a willing, like she's able to sort of see beyond and sort of see, you know, she's a breath of fresh air for Finn and for so many other people. I mean, on one hand, she's really rooted in this realistic upbringing. And also she's able to, like when she's writing the Fathiers, like she has a childlike quality about her, even though she's not a child. And Yoda too, like obviously he's not a child, but he does have this like twinkle to him. And, you know, young Anakin at one point in his life did too. So that's Rose's theme. John Williams really does develop it a lot, especially in his symphonic suites. But unfortunately, we don't hear it at all in episode 9. We get zero Rose's theme. Zero.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after that, Poe goes, all right, ground forces, lay down some fire. And then the cannons start shooting at the walkers. And here we get one of the ones that is an incidental motif, and it's called Resistance Deployed, according to the thematic like the Star Wars thematic catalog that Frank Lehman put together, who's like the main, like probably the biggest John Williams scholar, I would say, or especially the biggest like Star Wars films music scholar. So he's like a musicologist, music theorist. And so he actually has a catalog of themes. And so the names that he gives them are his own names, but because he has the most organized catalog and it has internal consistency, I use his names, and he knows that I use his names, and you know they are appropriate. So here's, we get Resistance Deployed, and we do hear this a lot in this film, specifically in the bomber run at the beginning. And this is the one that goes like do 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 do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Takes a while to settle in, but you know, we usually hear it like twice in a row. And it's usually like brass. So we get that, but just very briefly. And then we cut to Kylo Ren and Hux watching everything from their... are they in an AT-AT? I think they're in an AT-AT.
They're in his shuttle.
Oh, they're in his shuttle. Okay, okay. Hux says, 13 incoming light craft, which I don't actually know what light means unless it means... just small craft. I don't know.
I think that's basically it. They're not like anything that's going to take a whole lot of firepower to take down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They weren't necessarily made for combat. They've been like definitely modified. Not. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Poe has just like kicked his foot through one of them and been like, what the hell? So
that makes me laugh every time. I know. Don't know why.
It is really funny. Shall we hold until we clear them? Kylo's like, no, the resistance is in that mine. Push through. And here is where we get the Kylo Ren theme, the one that you missed. Do, 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 do. And then, oh my gosh, fill in any gaps if I'm, you know, if you have things to add. The TIE fighters swoop in and we get this sort of other thing that pops up all throughout this scene. And it's an incidental motif that's also in the catalog. And we also hear it, I think, toward the beginning of the film. It's called like whirling. It's like a whirling octatonic motif, like melody. And I'll demonstrate. So it's like, it's this, it's usually in the violins. I think the xylophone often doubles it. I think it's like, it's like, yeah. And so yeah, that happens a ton and it like will go higher and lower. And that's, it's just like saturating the scene. And the octatonic thing is just refers to like the octatonic scale that it shared, that it uses. And so we get that. Poe's like, fighters break off.
I'll point out that I really love, this isn't musical at all, but it's sound design. There's just like this really distinct noise that the TIE fighter blasts make when they're hitting the ground near where like all the resistance is entrenched. And I love that noise every time.
I think Bonnie Wilde came up with that, but the sound design is incredible in the crate scene. And like, I was watching some of the sound people talk to, I think it was like an interview with the Dolby Institute, and the Dolby Institute interviewer was like, you know, what scenes, you know, for our customers or whatever that have the Dolby sound system, which parts of the movie would you recommend they pay, you know, special, like which ones will be like the most gratifying? And, you know, other than the entire movie, they pointed out the Battle of Crait is like, if you have the Dolby sound system, apparently you can hear, you know, things coming from above you and like all of the detail coming from different places. And that makes me kind of want that. But the sound designers had a real, it was kind of a treat for them to work on this film because the music was done so far in advance. So they were able to craft the sound design around the score. Which is really
I did not
handy.
Know that. I thought music was generally like one of the last things done.
Not when you're John Williams. I think it was one of his like stipulations that he wanted an entire year. So cool. He had a whole year to write this. Because like John Williams literally like writes pencil to paper every note, which is exceedingly like, I don't know any other composers that do that. And so that takes a lot of time, obviously.
Yeah.
And he does most of it himself, and you know, he doesn't use computers. He never really figured out how to do that, and you know, he's always been so busy that he didn't really have time to like set aside a couple years to retool his whole workflow. So it's really funny that he still does that. And he wanted to enjoy the process and, you know, do his best work. And I think it's a really phenomenal score. But the reason that comes in handy is because the sound design and the score, there's like an intricate balance between them and the dialogue. There's an intricate balance and they have to fight for frequency space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's helpful if you know that like, you know, the whirling octatonic thing is kind of high pitched. So you're not going to like create sound design that lives in that same frequency range, because then it'll get lost. You won't hear either one. You'll just hear kind of a lot happening. So then you might introduce things that are in maybe the mids or the lows or, you know, different textures. So it's really so collaborative.
That stuff that I would never even it would never cross my mind that people would have to worry about that. I mean, I'm someone that every year when the Academy Awards come around, I have to Google the difference between sound editing and mixing just to remind myself. That's super interesting to think about.
Yeah. And oftentimes, like the composer, oftentimes the composer will have direction from, you know, the editors or the mixers or, you know, some other music supervisor people. And they'll be told, like, you know, you have to take out some of your instrumentation here or whatever. But it's a little bit different when you're working with John Williams. So they kind of worked around him. And while they did, you know, take his score down in the mix. And of course, he's subject to cutting, just like any other composer is. They were able to pay attention to what is John Williams choosing in the instrumentation and in the themes that he's bringing out. It's like, which emotions is he honoring in the scene? And like, which fears is he playing into? And I think that's just a really cool part of the process that I don't always think about, which is, I mean, each person that adds their own like art to the film has their own interpretation that they're sort of adding to it. And the music is no different.
That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on, we have a lot of explosions and stuff. Finn is like, Rose, you've got three behind you. And then the Death Trooper fires at Rose and misses. And she says, I can't lose them, which is kind of funny. She glances back. And here we get one of the tension themes. And this is also very present in The Bomber Run. Like, you know, there are a lot of similarities between this and The Bomber Run, to be honest. Probably on purpose. And that's the du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du. That's what that is. And God, there's so many motifs. Can't get my notes straight. Okay, then the Millennium Falcon appears behind her. And we get, again, the which is the Resistance deployed.
Is that before the Rebel motif comes in?
Yes, right before it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like I'm telling you, they're like one after another. They're just like, I don't know, slide it in there. And it's like 2 seconds of one, 2 seconds of another. Like for me, this 5 minutes goes by very slowly if I'm trying to listen to for the motifs, because it's like, wait, 2 seconds in, I have to pause and write another one down. And then finally we get the Rebel fanfare. And of course it's the Falcon.
Which I love just that silhouette going over, like immediately gives you chills. And then, yeah, coupled with the Rebel fanfare, it's like, love that.
Yeah. He has earned that, it works because we love it. That's why it works.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get Ray's theme, another one that feels familiar by this point. And she's like, I like this. I feel like that's been a meme.
Almost certainly. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that was in the Star Wars Lego holiday special or something. I don't know. I just have this, it has a meme-y quality to it. And then we get Rey's theme interspersed with that like xylophone violin thing, the whirling thing. And here, like, there are so many scene cuts, and with each, I mean, like scene, I guess, cuts, transitions, and with each one, the music sort of changes a little bit. So if you notice, like, whenever it moves to the First Order side of things, like the instrumentation immediately switches to like low brass or, you know, things that sound more ominous. And it happens like so seamlessly. So it cuts to Kylo and it's immediately low brass. And then when we go back, it's the Rebel fanfare again. Oh.
And this feels like all, I don't know, separate clips, but he just composed it to be that way and to like cut back and forth along with the movie.
Yeah. And, you know, there was an interview that he did where he was saying that, like, modern films, you can't get away with using, with doing so much of the leitmotif writing anymore, because just the filmmaking, the scoring style has changed so much. Like, now it's a lot more about textures and other things, and plus there's not much motivation to, like, develop leitmotifs just because of the way things are cut so fast and whatnot. And he feels lucky that he gets to have so much fun with Star Wars, because it's set up in such this, like, old school leitmotif, like, Wagnerian way. And he said that on this film he had a lot of fun just, like, getting to throw in little references here and there. And he says in the interview, like, maybe, you know, people won't pick up on it the first time, but, like, I like to think that it's there and subtly influencing, you know, what people are taking in. So, yeah, I think this was just him being like, I made all these themes, now I'm going to put them all in where I want them.
I mean, it's wild that just the same song has so many. I don't know if I've ever listened to this part of the movie, just the music, but it seems like it might be a little jarring musically to just bounce back and forth, but it never feels jarring in the movie.
Have you seen the score only version?
I think I did. I did when it first came out on Blu-ray. So it's been 3 years.
Okay. It's on Disney Plus now. And I think it's wild how much this scene actually really makes sense with the score only version, just because it's scored so tightly to the action. And, you know, I find it easier to hear the score that way without the sound design. And then to add that layer is, like, just, I don't know, it's just even more rewarding to hear it all together. But this is one of
those... You may have been asked this already because we're near the end of this movie, but do you know or have any idea why they did the score only version, like, for this movie? And that just...
Because Rian Johnson wanted it.
Yeah.
It was a Rian Johnson choice.
Huh. It's just interesting that that doesn't happen more often.
I agree. No, but Rian Johnson was, like, such a big fan of, you know, he just loves John Williams so much and, you know, has, like, a really reverence for the music that they had to mix a whole separate version. Like, it's a whole, that was, like, important to him. So,
huh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I wish they did it for more of them. That would be really cool.
I agree.
But yeah, alas. So where were we? Where were we? Okay, so Rebel Fanfare, Chewie, whirling on. What's the next thing? Okay, back to the First Order. Kylo's like, blow that piece of junk out of the sky. And then we get the other tension, resistance, and trouble theme, which is like, do 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 do. Ray's theme again, and then we get this catastrophe theme. so many themes. And so the catastrophe one is interesting. It's like everything slows down and it's like
that's the one I've been waiting for. Is this the theme that
okay.
That's the one in my head. I was like, okay, I can think,
like,
of that
this
one.
Has got to be something, but
right, okay, so that's catastrophe.
Yes. And, you know, it is a little bit reminiscent of the Battle of Hoth. And speaking of which, then we get the TIE fighter attack. Theme that comes next. And this part, so this is when, like, the Falcon is shot and they enter I wrote the Star Tours portion.
Yeah.
But they, like, it barrel rolls down, like, a crevice into the, like, stalagmites, like, this rift. And I mean, if you've ever been on the Star Tours ride at Disney World or Disneyland, this is, like, classic Star Tours. It's straight up, like, they use this music in Star Tours. They use the the Empire Strikes Back music, and you basically fly, like, through through the crystal, what is it, like, the crystal caves, and the Falcon sort of does that. It slides through the slit. I don't know. It's like a whole. It was an intentional reference, apparently.
I mean, it definitely fits. Like, I love that song. I, like, can't help but hum along to it anytime it pops up. But it does, the scene is obviously you're being attacked by TIE fighters. But then I think the other time they use it is in Return of the Jedi, when they're flying into the Death Star. And correct me if I'm wrong there, but like that whole, it just feels similar where you're flying through a tight space being chased by TIE fighters. So he's just like, yeah, we'll use that again. It's already a banger.
You're not wrong. So what can go wrong when you have that? And then the Rebel fanfare right after that. And then the Falcon just shoots out like a geyser. And it's quite a sight to be seen, just shooting out from, you know, underneath, straight up into the sky. Chewie pushes a porg out of the way. And then the resistance speeders start closing in on the cannon. And this is when, I think this is like when Poe shows a big moment of growth here. And, you know, Rose is like, there it is, that's a big gun. And we get really low, you know, brassy stuff that's like, I don't know, big gun music. And Finn is like, I know what this is. Like, he kind of feels like this is his moment. And, you know, he's like, the cannon's opening, this is our chance. And then meanwhile, Kylo's like, all firepower on those speeders. And, you know, Kylo gives Hux a really hilarious look when Hux just repeats him, basically. Mm-hmm. And this is when the Resistance are starting to realize, like, I think we're in over our heads here. Something that the music does here is when we see, like, each of the speeders exploding in, like, red dust, or I don't know what's happening, but the music swells and then sort of does this like puncture as each of them happen. So it's like boop, boop, and it's timed to like when each of the speeders like explodes, and it's like a little crescendo. It's like a swell until that. It's like, yeah, if you go back and watch that, it's like there's like two of them. And the music like perfectly scores that.
I've never noticed that. I think I just assumed it was part of the sound design.
Oh, interesting.
The explosions.
Well, it's probably both. So like the music does that and the sound design, you know, augments it.
Right.
Which happens a lot in this score. I mean, in Star Wars, but in this score too. Like another big one is like when the Praetorian guards earlier do their like, they're like, I don't know, slice thing. You kind of hear like the knife, you kind of hear like the sound design, but also in the score, there's something emulating that at the same time.
Right.
Layers. Here we cut to Leia. She's like, after, you know, we're taking heavy losses, and Leia gives this look. And I think I hear a hint of what is Kylo Ren's second theme, like his hesitant one. And that one is like, dee, 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 dee. And so we get those same four notes. And I don't know if that's intentional or if it's a coincidence or if it's, I don't know, just there's some emotional similarity, or maybe it's like a mother-son reference. I'm not sure. So that's just something I heard, but it might be an accident. Who knows? Back on the outside, Poe's racing toward the cannon. We keep hearing that xylophone string thing. Poe says, they're picking us all off. We're not going to make it. Finn says, all right, making my final approach. Target in sight. Guns are hot. And then Poe's like, no, pull off. And this is Poe showing his moment of growth. Here, it's really interesting because we see that Poe is like going for it. Finn is really going for it. Rose and Poe are like, no, retreat, pull away. And Finn is like, no, this is my moment. And the music here shifts so dramatically. Is that something, what do you make of that?
Yeah, just this is basically where the minute ends is like right at the start of like the choir coming in, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And just the Finn, I don't know what to call it, Finn's sacrifice, or it definitely made me think. I remember in the theater being like, oh my God, they're about to kill Finn. And I think the music probably had something to do with that, because it feels very sacrificial, maybe.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the music is really trying to make us feel that this is actually going to happen. Because, well, a few things. First of all, that music sort of reminds me of like the immolation of Anakin in Revenge of the Sith.
Mm.
And hearing that sort of slowed down strings and choir thing, just to me, you know, not just to me, but in cinema, and it often symbolizes, you know, death, like it's like Requiem, like it's like doom and, you know, the end and sacrifice and things like that. And I think really like the cinematography sort of emulates that as well, like, because both perspectives, like the musically and just the close-up that we see on his face, like with the camera work, it both switches to like, okay, now let's just focus, zero in on Finn, and this is what's going on inside of Finn's head. Like all of that music that we've been hearing before, that action stuff, all of that is still presumably going on outside of Finn's, you know, cockpit. But now we are suddenly in this little world. And it's sort of like also when Paige at the beginning, like when yeah. she's about to sacrifice herself, we do get like a close up on her experience, and the music, you know, becomes very particular to what Paige is going through. And it's also like that epic, like, you know, end of the world for this one person. And
yeah,
Finn sort of starts to have that Paige moment.
Huh. I never put that together. But yeah, the filmmaking and the music of just really focusing in on that one person. And like, you can kind of see the stuff going around outside of Paige's ship, or we'll cut to Poe or Captain Kennedy, but like, we don't hear any of that.
Exactly.
It never brings us out of Paige. That's really cool.
Yeah. It's manipulative. Music is, it's another resource to convey the story, which, you know, I love how collaborative like all the different art forms are. The Bomber Run similarities are plentiful in this scene. We have the Resistance over their heads. They're trying to take out a big piece of equipment, whether it's like a dreadnought or this, you know, big ion cannon. We have individual heroes trying to step up and show their willingness to sacrifice. So that's Paige, and we see that mirrored with Finn. But Resistance shows growth. Like this time, Poe doesn't want to sacrifice someone just to take out a dreadnought. Mm-hmm. This time he, you know, thinks it's better to retreat. And, you know, Rose also steps up because she saves, you know, she finally gets to save what she loves. And then I think shot-wise, you know, we see Paige touching the medallion. We see Rose touching the medallion. The Paige-Finn thing, I feel like this is like intentional rhyming here. Musically, a lot of the themes, same themes pop up, like all these tension and catastrophe and resistance mm-hmm. deployed themes are stuff that we hear during the Bomber Run.
And I think one of the big differences here is that, you know, the Resistance had a place to escape at the start when they were escaping Dakar. Now they don't. So, you know, even if they hit the cannon, that's just a delay. And so it's good to know that, yeah, like it's good to see Poe's growth, that it's not worth it just to hit him where it hurts. But like Finn still needing that one little last literal push to get it.
Yeah, and I think they do a good job conveying the actual desperation of this moment, which sets the stage more for when Luke, you know, makes his appearance. But here I think, what am I trying to say? There's So Finn shows growth. Rose shows growth. The Resistance as a movement sort of do, but also they're really let down that no one answers Leia's call. I remember being in the theater just thinking like, well, this is awkward. Like, what is happening? What is going to happen? How are we going to get out of this? And I think that's something I also probably felt during Empire Strikes Back, though I didn't see that in the theater, but I kind of get a similar, I mean, at this point, thinking that this would be the end of the movie, like I sort of had this similar, like, oh, I guess we're really screwed. But I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself. Obviously, that's not what ends up happening at the end of the movie. I feel like this has a much, I feel like this has kind of an ending. I feel like this has not a to be continued nature to it. But I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, something that I think is really classic is like the First Order versus Resistance, their like fighting techniques and just like the things that they employ to defend each other and, I mean, not defend each other, to defend themselves and attack the other is like, the First Order slash Empire are always going to have just like some big weapon, some big thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether it's like 500 Death Stars or it's like, of course, it's a really, really big gun.
Yeah. Really... Miniaturized Death Star tech.
Yeah. And I'd like to get your take on all of the various like abandoned bases that the Rebellion have and the Resistance all over the galaxy?
Even just the fact that they exist or?
Yeah, like why do you think that is? And do you think they're always destined to be this like really ragtag, desperate operation?
Well, I think that when it comes to why there are bases scattered around, because, you know, they all started out before it was a Rebel Alliance, they were all just Rebel cells and they were all just hiding around. So Crait was just a place that they used to hide. The Leia Princess of Alderaan book showed us that like Bail Organa, it was a pretty major one because Bail Organa and Mon Mothma knew about it. But I think that people that weren't even like the people on Lothal and Star Wars Rebels, that was just another cell that was fighting against the Empire, but not as an organized movement. So I think that all across the galaxy, especially in the Outer Rim, you can find just these places where a few people probably hung out and plotted and planned against the Empire. So they probably just know where all those places are if they ever need another place to hide. And I forget the second part of the question.
Me too. But I feel like the same, like I was thinking about like, why does it always feel like they're bootstrapping something and like just in a desperate situation? And I have been thinking, especially after the Last Jedi novelization that really explained why Snoke really wanted to, you know, live on the supremacy and have that be like their mobile operations, that they, because of the danger of just like being in one place, like, you know, once someone discovers your base, like you have to move on. And that's just the life. That's like the life of resistance and of, you know, fighting the power, I guess. But these little, what you said about like the little cells, like that is also very true. Like it's not always one organized rebellion with, you know, a clear cut leader. It's like, it's resistance. It's not just like two random political groups. It's like mm-hmm. people resisting oppression across the galaxy. And that resistance just springs up in really organic ways in different places. So it's going to be harder to be, you know, organized about it.
Yeah. Your question about, are they destined to always be just a ragtag group of underdogs? I think in the immediate future, I mean, the Rise of Skywalker was like, okay, the galaxy is finally saying like, no, we're not going to just let the small group of heroes save us and we'll just sit back and wait. Like the galaxy as a whole came to attack Exegol. So I think at least for now, the First Order is probably gone, but the galaxy seems pretty united in that front. But I figure that if we were to jump hundreds of years into the future, there'd probably be some new level of complacency, where if another threat came up, like they'll just go, ah, we'll let the heroes handle that, and we'll just sit back. That kind of seems like the cycle.
It does seem like the cycle, and it seems like the cycle that it's like futile to try to escape it, because like it, the whole thing runs on like balance and the tension and all, and you know, all of those moving parts, you know, you can't have things all perfect. Can you name all of the people fighting in this battle?
Curious. Absolutely not.
Who are the main resistance people?
Outside of the main cast. Rose, Kai Thrinali is the Abednado pilot. I don't think I know any of the other pilots.
Is that the one that's Mark Hamill's son?
No, that's Manao. Okay. That's Nathan Hamill, who I've met multiple times and is super fun, super nice guy. So all of Mark Hamill's family is in that base, or all of his children. I believe they're all named Manao because Nathan's character in Revenge of the Sith, I think, had that last name. So they just kind of kept that going as an Easter egg, as if
I didn't know he was in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, I think so. He's definitely in one of the prequels.
Oh, that's cool.
You can find like a picture of him looking much younger in like this purple robe or something. I think he's on Coruscant somewhere.
Nice. Fancy. Very fancy. Do you have a favorite TIE fighter?
Oh. I think I've always been partial to the Interceptor. Okay. I like the angular wings with the cut out of them. That tends to be my favorite. I'm partial to the TIE Phantom as well. It's like the old Legends one that it's able to go invisible and cloak. But that was from like an old silly video game that I just grew up loving.
Oh, what was the video game?
Rebel Assault 2.
Okay. Cool. I didn't play that, but I don't recognize it from books.
It does not hold up.
Oh. not all of Legends stuff does for me, but some of it does. Do you have any favorite musical themes in Star Wars?
I do love the TIE fighter attack, but probably the asteroid field in Empire. I love that one. Everyone loves Duel of the Fates because come on, but I think the asteroid field, like every time I'm watching that, I just turn it up real loud.
Okay. So the asteroid field is a really good example of a set piece theme in Star Wars. And this would be that too. Like the Battle of Crait is also an example of a set piece theme. And that just means like an extended action sequence, you know, often really heavily detailed scoring, like the Battle of Crait, packed with like motifs here and there. And those are really standout pieces in fans' mind, especially like the asteroid field, because when you think of it, you immediately go to that specific instance of it, because it's like, you know, set piece themes are often just like very so specific and so reminiscent of where they first appeared, and like are so almost like bespoke for that scene in the way that they're put together. So like, it's not like when you hear the Force theme, that could be from any movie.
Right.
It's,
Yeah.
It's like really, a really direct connection. And I find that makes it like really emotionally strong for things like that. And I mean, I love those pieces. They're just, the asteroid field is just, yeah.
That's interesting to like, and then I think back to, okay, well, what are my, like, I love the trench run.
That's another example. New Hope.
But it took me a second to think of what that music sounds like, which I just think that's interesting. Where the asteroid field is just so, it immediately, you know what it is.
Yeah, you're not like a lot of people share that sentiment, and so do I. And I, who knows, like what things impact that. But there are a lot of John Williams set piece themes in Star Wars, and a lot of them are quite memorable. And, you know, scholars have like a field day analyzing those ones, just because they're so rich with motifs. And I think, I don't know, I feel like, I like to think that he has fun with those. They seem fun. And this is a great example of that. Let's see. Did you have anything else to add about this scene or Star Wars music in general? I know you're a big trivia person. Is there ever music trivia on these things?
Oh, generally no, but I'm trying, there's gotta be.
Really?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of like any musical trivia. I'm sure that there's something in my head, but not off the top of my head, no. And I think we covered everything that I wrote down in my notes.
Awesome. I'm surprised. There should, that would be a stumper. Okay, wait.
It's one of those where like, the second you ask me, I'm not going to be able to think of anything. But someday later, like tonight, I'll be talking with Molly and just a piece of musical trivia will come out of my mouth.
Okay, wait, here's one. What's the first film that the Imperial March appears in?
It's Empire, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Ooh, I think you'll know it. But what's the first scene that features the Imperial March?
Oh.
Not necessarily the full thing, but the motif of it, I guess.
I don't know off the top of my head. What is it?
It's the very first scene when it, after the crawl, it pans down to the Star Destroyer, and it's just a very quiet, like, da, 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 very quiet
like
and slow.
Like in slow? Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good one.
Thank you to the soundtrack show. See, nice. I just stole my trivia from David.
Well, you
w.
have to
Collins.
Learn it from somewhere. Uh-huh. Okay, well, here's the Last Jedi specific one.
Okay.
What is the John Williams non-Star Wars reference that's in this film? Like a musical quote.
Wow. I'm trying to think if I can make an educated guess on... I'll guess that it is somewhere on Canto Bight.
Yes.
Okay. See if I can get more specific. I'm trying to, like, maybe the Fathirs, maybe the... I'll say the very first introduction to them going into the casino.
No, but okay. I'm impressed that you jumped to Canto Bight. So it is actually, like, right before the Fathirs bust in, and you see the glass shake, uh-huh. And you hear this, like, lounge piano music.
Okay.
That lounge piano music is The Long Goodbye, which is, like, a film John Williams scored.
That's awesome.
And John Williams himself is playing the piano.
Also awesome. Yeah, I had...
And then the drum that bangs is his brother. So
I never,
it's like
ever...
a John Williams, a Williams Brothers duet right there.
That's awesome. I never, ever would have known that.
Yeah. It's a really random thing that Rian Johnson really wanted. He was like, I love your score for The Long Goodbye, and I would really like that song there. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah, it is pretty funny. Okay. Now that we're at the end of the episode, I always review the motifs. So let me just list out the motifs. These will also be in the show notes. It's March of the Resistance, Rose, Resistance Deployed, the Kylo Ren's aggressive theme, the whirling octotonicism, generic tension, rebel fanfare, Rey's main theme, resistance and trouble tension, catastrophe, TIE fighter attack, and potentially Kylo Ren's hesitant theme. That's a lot. And we are on Battle of Crait. That's on the soundtrack. And highly recommend watching this 5 minutes, actually like this 7 minutes at least, on the score only version, if you have access to that on Disney Plus, because it's so detailed. It's very detailed here. I think it's really incredible. Thank you so much, Alex, for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for teaching me. I'm excited that I now know that thing is called catastrophe. And I'm gonna, I have more stuff to annoy Molly with. I'm gonna hit her, be like, that's catastrophe right there. And that's resistance in distress.
I love it. If people don't already know where to find you online, where can they find you online?
Our YouTube channel is Star Wars Explained, where we talk about all of the new movies and TV shows and books and comics and anything that's coming out Star Wars, we try to cover it. And we're on Twitter at Star Wars Explain with no ED. Those are the two main places, I'd say.
Yeah. Also, I noticed that you have a TIE Fighter, like an every TIE Fighter video.
Oh, yeah.
So, I definitely looked at that last night. I'll put a link to that in the show notes for people who are interested in all the different TIE Fighters, which, by the way, they all have like different sounds too, like different elephant noises and car screeches and stuff. I hope this episode was interesting for people. You can find me online at Star Wars Museman on Twitter. If you are listening to this as a podcast, you can also watch it on YouTube and vice versa. If you're watching on YouTube but prefer it as a podcast, you can find it as a podcast. You can leave a comment or email me at podcast@StarWarsMusicMinute if you have something to say, or, you know, I'm all ears for corrections as well. At the end of the season, I do want to do a things I missed episode with, you know, any corrections to things that I said that may have been wrong, like a fact check episode, basically. And you can also find me at Chrysanthi Tan on Twitter or Instagram or anywhere. And last but not least, there's a link in the show notes if you want to submit an anonymous question on a form. But that's all I have for today. We're almost done with the movie. Exciting times. And I'll see you next week on Star Wars Music Minute.